Hare Krishna, thank you so much. I'm gonna just like this will be quite informal and interactive. I'm gonna ask you guys to also maybe type some things on in on the chat. Is that okay? I'll
Yes.
ask questions. I guess those in the temple room can just shout out, and someone can type it up. And I may also be sharing my screen at certain points. Can everyone in the temple see the screen?
You can Yes.
come in. And they can kind of see it. Well, I mean, it's like, if you can see it, it's nice. You can maybe come a closer. I don't know if you're it's still social distancing, right, in Germany or like, you don't want to be illegal. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be with you. I'm really, really happy. I came to Berlin many years ago when I was a kid with my parents, and since then, I've been through Germany quite a few times, but not to Berlin, so hopefully soon. But really nice to be with all of you. And today we're discussing from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 3, text number 37, very, very famous verse of the Gita. I'm just going to like share my, oh, can you just let me share my screen, Prabhuji? And then maybe I just need the rights to share my screen if possible.
Where can I find this?
Oh, okay. I think it's like this, some kind of option somewhere.
You know it, sure.
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah.
Okay.
But this one is for
Yeah,
us.
no, this is my screen.
Yeah.
It should be like you can give me some like rights to host, or you make me the host.
Wait. So
Yeah.
no.
Oh, Bhakti Jason is the host now.
Really? He
No,
bumped
he doesn't
in.
want to be the host. Jason doesn't want to be the host.
Bumped in. So what else to do?
You can, I think you can like on the participants, you can drag
Hi.
it.
Hi. Kann mir mal jemand helfen, weil ich weiß nicht, wie das geht. Unter den, jetzt habe ich jemand anderem den Host zurückfordern. So, jetzt.
Von Berlin is the host now.
So, Host erstellen. So, na.
You are the host. Okay, great. I'm the host.
I'm sorry.
No, thank you. All right, so I'm just going to share this verse on the screen so you can all see it. And where am I here? Yeah, you guys can see that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all right, great. So this is a very, very famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita. We all know it, I'm sure. So let us read this verse together. I'll just recite it and then read the translation purport, and then we'll have a little bit of a discussion on it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this is chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, just kind of putting it in context. Krishna has already taught Arjuna many wonderful things about karma yoga, about how he doesn't have to leave the world, but he can continue living in the world, but just connect his activities to the supreme spiritual cause, and in that way he won't be entangled. And Krishna's been telling Arjuna that he's got to do his own duty. Don't try and live someone else's life. Live your own life, because we each have our own unique dharma. And everything makes sense to Arjuna. So Arjuna is like, I'm on board. Sign me up. It makes perfect sense. But then he says to Krishna, why is it that even when I know what I should be doing, even when I know what is the right course of activity, I still end up doing the wrong thing? Why is it that we always seem to be in our heads knowing something, but then in practice, in life, doing something else? So here Krishna explains, the answer in a very wonderful verse. So I'll just read it myself, because I guess it's going to be difficult if we interact. So I'll just read it myself, and you can follow along. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudbhava, Mahashano Mahapapma, Vidyainam Mihavairinam. So translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "It is lust only, Arjun, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world." Purport. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. Wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is considered the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If therefore the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This inquiry is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, wherein it is said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, one should inquire into the Supreme. And the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam as or the origin of everything is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the Supreme. If therefore lust is transformed into love for the Supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or in other words, desiring everything for Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravan, but by doing so, he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they're employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyanati Miranda Sigyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuga Padakamalan Shri Guru and Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Hari Priye, Vancha, Kalpataru, Vyascha, Kripa, Sindhu, Vyevacha, Patitanam, Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo, Namaha, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we're talking about something which is, I'm assuming, very, very relevant to each one of us. Lust. Lust is a problem that every living entity in this material world is having. One time a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, like, you always, the devotees are always talking about lust and so many things, like, I don't think I have any lust. Prabhupada said, maybe you need to go to a psychologist. I mean, there's really no one in this world who is free from, really speaking, lusty tendencies. The Chaitanya Charitamrita explains what lust is. Atmendriya priti vancha tare balikam, Krishnendriya priti icha dhare premanam. If we ever have a desire that I should satisfy my senses, then we can understand we have some calm, some lust within us. And if our entire life is dedicated simply to serving Krishna's senses, to selflessly serving others, then we can understand we have truly developed love. So to the extent that we still have some selfishness in our life, some sense gratificatory tendencies, we can understand we're still under the sway of lust. And this lust really, when we think of lust, we think of man-woman attraction, which is definitely the root of it. But then it takes many, many other forms as well. It expands. But it begins from actually man-woman lust. One time Prabhupada was walking in New York, and he pointed at all the skyscrapers. And Prabhupada said, the women in New York must be very, very beautiful. So Tripurari Maharaj was there. He couldn't understand. Like, Prabhupada said, no, the women in New York must be very beautiful. Otherwise, why are the men building such high skyscrapers? Because the verse in the Bhagavatam says, Pumsha Striya Maituni Bhava Maitam Tayor Mithuri Daya Granti Mahur Atobi Hakshetra Sutapta Viter Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti. That when there is attraction between man and woman, then from that come so many things. Comes family, home, living entities, money, many complicated arrangements, so many things expands from the desire for the opposite sex. So our mission in Krishna consciousness is to try to transform the lust into love for Krishna. Because lust will never satisfy us, lust will never be satiated, and lust will always torment us from actually the progressive path in life. So our mission is transforming lust into love. Okay. I'm going to make this pretty interactive. I'm just going to ask you to put on the chat right now, if someone came to you and said, I've got a lot of problems with lust, what? Just give me like one bit of advice that you would give them. If someone says, just write it in the chat. I won't unmute you because otherwise it will take too long. Can you all write in the chat? Is that possible? You got the rights, right? What advice would you give someone if they said, I'm struggling with lust? Do some puja. Thank you, Jason. Do it until you get bored of it. Okay. That's a very liberal approach, okay? Come and chant, wonderful. Pause before you act, japa. Okay, thank you, Kirsten. Anyone else? What kind of, anything that's not been mentioned here? What other things, practical things, can you tell them? Apply their desires in some way. Thank you, Tirumala. Count till 100. And then what? Self-destruct. Read the Bhagavad Gita. Wonderful. Any other practical things that helped? Think about marriage. Okay, good. Sport. Okay, like engage your physical energy, like take up a hobby, like channel that energy. Very good. Give us some more practical things that help to deal with lust. What practical changes can we make to our lives to help deal with lust? Anything else you can think of? Cold showers. But for Jason, thank you. Anything else? Eat less. Okay, yeah, that's a really important thing. Lifestyle. Talk to a monk. Wonderful. Pranayama. Okay, yeah, good. These are all wonderful things. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to like summarize. Be safe. Don't associate with women or for men or women with men. Avoid passionate people. Great. Thank you so much. Pardon me? Was that? Yeah, okay. What I'm going to do, I'm going to share my screen with you. I like sometimes drawing things just to kind of help depict what I'm trying to say. So I'm just going to draw something here. I hope you'll all be able to see it. Yeah. Okay, so we are in spiritual life trying to transform our lust into love. That's basically the journey that we're trying to go on. Now, there are many things which help us to transform lust into love, but the essence of what transforms lust into love is basically a change of heart. And that change of heart comes about by devotional service. By chanting, by serving Krishna, by basically removing all of the anartas or unwanted things within our hearts, then ultimately our lust turns into love and our desires completely change. Now, having said that, there's also a supporting factors while you're doing devotional service. So what are the supporting factors? You mentioned many of them. Living the right lifestyle. That means, you know, not exposing yourself to situations which are going to be agitating, not having habits that will basically make the senses more active, living more in the mode of goodness, having the right eating habits, all of this kind of stuff. So lifestyle definitely helps. Knowledge definitely helps, as many of you mentioned. Read the Bhagavad Gita. Strengthen your intelligence. Because in the moment where you have a decision over what to do, whether to do something that is right or whether to do something that is tempting, if you have a strong intelligence, if you have a lot of knowledge, then your sense of doing what is right will be stronger than your sense of doing what feels good. So you need to have strong intelligence, and that comes from knowledge. Another thing that helps, as you all mentioned, is association. When we're around spiritual people, then their strength, their advice, their conviction in spiritual life also infuses us with strength and conviction. And so we're able to ensure that we don't become deviated by different temptations. So like this, there are many, many supporting factors which will help one in their journey from lust to love. Okay, it's a long journey. It takes time. But we can do it by the practice of spiritual life. Now, what I want to focus on today is something else. The supporting factors help, but the supporting factors in and of themselves will not turn our lust into love. You're not going to turn your lust into love just because you have cold showers every day. You're not going to turn your lust into love just because you have a lot of wisdom that you're reading every single day. You're not going to turn your lust into love just because you make sure you have the right habits and you're not eating late at night. These things won't help you to turn your lust ultimately into love. They'll help, but the thing that's going to turn lust into love is the devotional service, and not just the devotional service that we perform, but the intensity with which we perform the devotional service. And this is what I want to share with you today, is that if you want to turn your lust into love, it requires one to increase the intensity of their devotional service. Lust is very, very powerful, as you know. So the only way in which you can transform it is if you take up devotional service in a very, very powerful way. And today, we're going to kind of look at what it means to practice spiritual life, devotional service with intensity. I hope that the points I'm going to raise are going to be very practical. So my sense is that I'm going to speak for shorter, and then I'd like to invite more questions and answers. So while I'm speaking, please try to come up with as many questions as you can. And if something immediately comes to your mind, you can always put it in the chat box, the question, and then I'll come back to it. In a very famous verse in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's mentioned, Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udharati divrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. This is an amazing verse because it's very hope-giving, but it's very challenging also. There's good news in this verse, but there's also very challenging news for each one of us. I'll give you the good news first. What the verse explains is that akama sarva kamova, whether you have no desires or whether you have every single material desire under the sun, moksha kama udarati, or whether you just want to have liberation, it doesn't matter what desires you may have within your consciousness. Divrena bhakti yogena, if you engage in bhakti yoga, yajeta purusham param, ultimately you can purify yourself and you can go back to the spiritual world and you can become a pure devotee of Krishna. So nobody should ever look at themselves and think, I'm too far gone. I've got such a bad background. I've done so many bad activities in my life. I'll never be able to do it. It's just not possible for me. No, in this verse is being said that even if you have sarva kama, you're infected by so many material desires. It doesn't matter. If you engage in bhakti yoga, you can purify yourself. However, there is a qualifier used in this verse. There is some challenging news for each one of us. What is said in the verse is, divrena bhakti yogena. You have to perform bhakti yoga, but it has to be divrena bhakti yogena. Now, divrena is a very interesting word. Divrena means with force, with strength, with focus, with intensity. So you can't do devotional service in a half-hearted way and think you're going to transform your lust into love. You must do it with force, with strength, with focus, and ultimately with intensity. So what I want to share with you today is four ways in which you can measure the intensity of your devotional service, and four ways or four questions you can ask yourself am I increasing the intensity in these different ways? As we advance in spiritual life, we should be increasing the intensity of our bhakti yoga. It's not that we should be stagnant. It's not that whatever we were doing 5 years ago, we should be doing the same thing now. We should be doing the same thing and much more. That's how we'll actually make significant advancement. So I hope everyone's with me. I am going to share with you 4 points by which you can increase the intensity of your spiritual life, your devotional service. And the first word I want to give you is quantity. The first way in which we increase the intensity of our devotional service is by increasing the quantity. We have to kind of build a spiritual life for ourselves. We have to build a schedule for ourselves of how we live our lives so that there's no place for Maya to enter. And, you know, like I used to work on the airport many, many years ago, and we used to load the planes with bags. And I used to be the person driving the staircase up to the plane, you know, where people would then walk down. So if someone would ever by accident just kind of touch the airplane and kind of even create some small mark in the airplane body, then immediately they would ground the whole plane. Because they would have to do a proper check to make sure there's not even any hole or any kind of any screw that's come out or anything that's come loose. Because when the plane flies in the air, if there's any small hole or any small gap, because the air pressure is so high when you're flying at altitude, the air can come in through that little hole and it can rip the whole plane apart. So it's very, very dangerous. So in our lives, gaps are dangerous. Because as they say in the English language, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So what we need to start doing is finding a way for ourselves to be engaged all the time. Now, when you're living outside, when you're working in the world, when you're functioning in society, it requires a little bit of ingenious thinking, but there's actually a way in which you can begin increasing the quantity of your spiritual absorption by having that desire. So a devotee is always trying to do more service, is always trying to do more chanting, is always trying to do more reading, more practical preaching to help the world. A devotee is always thinking bigger. And in this way, a devotee is thinking how to utilize all their time for Krishna. Once Prabhupada was in a Pandal program in Delhi, and some very, very rich business people came up to him. I mean, these were like, you know, very influential, powerful people. And they came up to Srila Prabhupada and they all like humbly bowed down to Prabhupada. You know, like these big, like millionaire business people. So then later on, one devotee asked Prabhupada, said, Prabhupada, how is it that these powerful, rich, wealthy industrialists, who normally are very, very proud, how is it that they're bowing down to you? So Prabhupada looked at the devotee and he said, because I have no lust. So the devotee was like, wow, that's the power of someone's purity. When someone has great purity, then naturally people want to surrender to that person. So Prabhupada said, they're bowing down to me because I have no lust. And then later on, Prabhupada was walking with the devotee and he came back to the question and he said, actually, I don't have any time for lust. Now, obviously, we know Prabhupada didn't have any lust, but he was giving the devotee the clue that even if you're not on the level of not having any lust, if you can come to the point of saying, I don't have any time for lust, because I'm so busily engaged in serving Krishna, in doing spiritual things, then that busyness, the fire of that busyness and quantity of devotional service will save you. So therefore, Prabhupada showed us the example of someone who was always trying to do more in spiritual life. Like Prabhupada's spiritual master told him to go to the Western countries to preach. Prabhupada could have gone to one Western country and stopped there, like I fulfilled the order of my guru. But he didn't. He went all over the world 14 times traveling. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Prabhupada, write books in English. Prabhupada could have wrote 1, 2, 5 books in English and stopped there, but he didn't. He kept writing and writing and writing till the final days. Prabhupada could have opened 1 temple or 10 temples in key Western cities. But no, Prabhupada wanted to go to every single town and village. He was ready to go anywhere and everywhere. Prabhupada could have made 10 disciples or 20 disciples and then just kind of said, well, I fulfilled the order of my... No, he initiated as many as he could and he gave as many opportunities as he could. Because that's the life of a devotee, always increasing the quantity. So Prabhupada was tireless, always traveling. Prabhupada said, my disease is that I cannot think small. I'm constantly thinking big. So this is what it means to intensify our spiritual life, our devotional service. First thing is try to increase the quantity of what you're doing. And look back in your life in the last year, in the last 2 years, and ask yourself, am I doing more now than I was 1 year ago? Am I doing more now than I was 6 months ago? And if you're not moving up in terms of quantity, you may want to look at that. Because spiritual life means anandam buddhivardhanam, is always expanding. Okay, so this is the first meditation I want to give you. If you want to increase the intensity of your spiritual life, increase the quantity of devotional service. Now let me give you another word, quality. It's not just about doing a lot of things in devotional service, but it's about doing it with quality. It's about doing it with attention. It's about doing it with sensitivity. It's about doing it with love. Because Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatatmana. Even if one says like, Krishna, I don't have the capacity to offer you a lot of quantity. All I can give you is 1 leaf, 1 flower, 1 fruit. Krishna says, no problem. Give it to me. Bhakti uparitam, but do it with quality. So we should be increasing our quantity, but simultaneously we should be increasing the quality of our devotional service. And increasing the quality means 2 things, the external offering and the internal mood. So say, for example, one is doing puja for the deities. That's their devotional service. Then what does it mean to increase the quality of your puja to the deities? It means, number one, on an external level, make a better offering. Like now, we're in lockdown at the manor and it's summertime, so many flowers are growing. So yesterday, all the garlands for the deities were made from flowers which were grown right here in our garden at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So that hasn't actually happened for a long time. So that was very beautiful to actually grow the flowers, to hand pick them, and then to make the garland, and then to beautifully offer it to Krishna. The external quality of the offering, what is that? Let's increase the external quality, the attention that we give to the service that we do for Krishna. And increasing the quality means to also improve the internal mood. So a pujari not only makes a beautiful garland for the Lord with attention to the external quality, but while he's offering or while she's offering the puja, she's trying to have a very deep internal meditation trying to stay Krishna conscious, trying to stay absorbed, trying to meditate on the Lord's form when offering the arati. Like say, for example, take Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is making milk for Krishna. The first thing is that she doesn't have to do it herself. She's got so many other maid servants who can make the milk for Krishna. She doesn't, but she's doing it because she wants to do it. But now look at how Mother Yashoda makes the milk for Krishna. Look at the quality of the external offering. Nanda Maharaj has hundreds of thousands of cows, but amongst those hundreds and thousands of cows, there's 8 cows which are special because they give the sweetest, most rich milk. So when Mother Yashoda wants to make milk for Krishna, she takes milk from those 8 cows. She distills it into the best offering made possible. She personally boils it. She personally churns it. And then what she's doing while she's making Krishna's milk is that internally she's singing songs about Krishna. And it said that Mother Yashoda is singing songs. Her bracelets are moving, which are like kartals. And the mortar is moving while she's churning milk, which is like a mridanga. So almost while she's making the milk or churning the yogurt for Krishna, it's like there's a whole kirtan going on. So that's a beautiful internal mood. So this is what it means to do devotional service with quality, that we improve the external offering and we improve the internal mood. Here's another thought for you. This one you may not like so much, but it's important. Difficulty. If we want to increase the intensity of our devotional service, which will burn up the lust and allow love of Krishna to manifest, then we have to be prepared to take on more difficulty in Krishna's service. What this means is that we shouldn't just do the services which are easy. We shouldn't just do the services which are comfortable. We shouldn't just do the services that are inspiring to us. We shouldn't just do the services that we get the most recognition for or the most satisfaction from. But rather, we should try to go to a more selfless level of devotional service where we're ready to do a devotional service which may be difficult, which may be challenging, which may require us to make a sacrifice, but we do it because we want to go to a deeper level of selflessness. Devotional service will only ever really satisfy us when it's ahaituki apratihata. Ahaituki means unmotivated, and apratihata means uninterrupted. So, taking on difficulty or difficult services in spiritual life is actually very, very good in the sense that it helps us to come to a deeper level of surrender, selflessness, dependence on Krishna. And it also helps us to draw mercy because now we're not just doing what we like to do, but we're doing what is the need of the day. So say, for example, the demigods and demons are churning the milk ocean. You may know this famous pastime from the Bhagavatam. So as many, many things are coming out of the ocean, one of the first things that comes out of the ocean is poison. So this poison is so deadly. It could finish off the whole universe. It could finish off all the living entities. So something has to be done. Someone has to deal with this problem. Someone has to take it upon themselves to take on this difficult service of somehow disposing of this poison. So who comes forward? Lord Shiva comes forward. And Lord Shiva says, I'll do the difficult service. I'll do this service. I'll relieve everyone from the suffering and pain in order to allow you to then successfully go on and churn the milk ocean. So Lord Shiva takes on that difficult service. He drinks the poison and then his throat becomes blue, and then he becomes known as Nilkant, which means the blue-throated one, because the poison is in his neck. And then and then we find, you know, that there's a very, very famous verse that is quoted there about Lord Shiva. And that verse, in that verse, it says, what is that verse now? It says, great souls take on suffering, take on difficulty to relieve the difficulties of others. There is no paramaradhanam taddi purushasya kilatmanaha. There's no higher way of worshipping the Lord than taking on difficulty to relieve the difficulties of the Lord or the difficulties of the living entities. So we should be ready to take on some difficulty for Krishna, because it will help intensify our devotional mood and our service attitude. And now I'm going to give you one final point. Responsibility. If you want to intensify your devotional service, then intensify the responsibility that you take. In the beginning, when we're in spiritual life, we're very much just thinking of ourselves, of my spiritual life, of my relationship with Krishna, of my chanting, of overcoming my problems. But when we want to intensify our devotional service, then what we begin to do is taking responsibility for the devotional service of others. And that means reaching out, helping others. When we bring out the best in others, then Krishna brings out the best in us. When we help solve other people's problems, then Krishna helps us to solve our own problems. When we are focused on bringing happiness to others, then Krishna infuses us with a happiness. We shouldn't just be thinking of our own spiritual life. But when we begin taking responsibility for helping other people in their spiritual life, then that is considered a much more intense type of devotional service. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nachatasman manushyeshu kashkin me priyakritama bhavita nachame tashmad anya priyataro bhuvi. If there is someone who gives this message to others, if there is someone who takes the responsibility of delivering my wisdom to others, if someone takes responsibility to help others in their spiritual journey, there is no servant in this world more dear to me than that person, nor will there ever be one more dear. So we have to take the responsibility. In the Bhagavatam, you find the story of Priyavrata in the beginning of the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. Priyavrata is in the forest. He's having a great time. He's living a life of renunciation. He's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Everything's going fine. But then what happens? One day, his father, Svayambhuva Manu, comes to the forest. And he says, Priyavrata, I know you're having a great time here. I know everything's wonderful for you. But now what I want you to do is come back to the kingdom and become the king. Priyavrata's like, no way. I'm not going back to the king. I'm here in the forest. I'm absorbed in spiritual life. My spiritual life is going just fine. I don't want to go back to the kingdom. I don't want to take up the throne. I don't want to be entangled in material activities. I could become diverted. I don't want to take responsibility for that whole thing. I'm good in my spiritual life here. After Svayambhuva Manu tries, then Brahma comes. And Brahma comes and he says, well, Svayambhuva Manu has told you, and I'm also telling you, that you might be doing okay here, Priyavrata, but we have a bigger mission for you. We want you to take more responsibility for the spiritual life of not just yourself. We want you to take responsibility for the spiritual life of many others. And therefore, although you're doing well here, in the mountains, in seclusion, if you come to the kingdom and take up this responsibility, many more people will be benefited. And for that, taking that responsibility, you also will be benefited because it's a higher type of devotional service. And so Priyavrata goes. He leaves the forest behind and he becomes a king, and he becomes a very good king. Even Prahlad Maharaj says, Prayena deva munayo swave mukti kama monam charanti vijane na parartha nishta neitan vihaya kripanan vimimuksha eko na chanyam ekam vichiro vichinvan. He says, Prayena deva munayo swave mukti kama. Most of the rishis, most of the yogis, what they do, they go to the mountains and they go in seclusion. Vimumuksha eko, they're looking for their own liberation. But me, Prahlad Maharaj says, I'm not interested in going to the mountains away from the people. I'm interested in going into the city. I'm interested in going into the populated places where all the people are living, because I don't want to be liberated alone. I'm ready. I want to take responsibility for helping others as well. And in this way, when our devotional service comes into the realm of taking responsibility for others, then it becomes a much more intense type of devotional service. So I shared this with you today, that if we want to go from lust to love, then the ultimate factor is we have to perform devotional service. However, there are supporting factors to that devotional service, which is having good lifestyle, having good knowledge, having good association. And the other thing we need to consider is that in our devotional service, we need to be increasing in our intensity. And increasing in our intensity in devotional service means do more devotional service, do it with better quality, take on more difficulties in a selfless way to serve Krishna, and try to take responsibility of the spiritual life of more than just yourself. Try to take responsibility for other people's spiritual lives. And in that way, you get much more mercy. So those were some thoughts I wanted to share with you. I don't know if someone wants to ask any questions. So there's something on the chat here from Panchamaveda Prabhu. It's a long question. Prabhu, do you want to ask the question? You can unmute yourself and maybe ask it. Yep, you're on, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for the lecture. My first question is, you mentioned that we should be always engaged. So yeah, that lust is not so a big problem. But to be always engaged, we need a service which fits us really. So how we can find our dharma, our mission in life? Because as a grihastha, it's very difficult which job I should do. And then you do also service. So how we can come closer to that?
Yeah, thanks, Prabhu. This is a really, really good question. And I'm just coming back to my screen here. I'm just going to erase this. We could do a whole session on this, but I'll just say a few points to you about finding dharma. Let me just say, first thing is, what is your dharma? Because sometimes we're not also clear what it means, dharma. You can do this exercise when you get some time. Draw a circle, and in that circle, write down all of the things you like doing. Yeah? The things that you like to do. In another circle, write down all of the things you are good at. Okay? So there's certain things that we like doing, but we're not good at. And there's certain things we're good at, but that we don't really like to do them. So when you find activities which you're good at and which you like doing, which is basically the intersection here, this is basically your dharma. This is a very simple way. It's obviously a bit more complicated, but in a overall way, that's how you can define it in a very, very simple way. Now, how do you find this dharma practically? In previous ages, you know what would happen is that the children would go to a gurukul and they would have the same teacher for 20 years looking at them. And so when they finished their studies and by the time they were in their 20s, this teacher knew them inside out. And therefore the teacher would help them to decide that this is your path in life. But in our lives, we don't have that kind of facility. We don't have those spiritually realized people who can tell us what our dharma is. So there's a few things you can do to how to find your dharma. Yeah, there's a few things you can do. The first thing is, you just have to try different things. Like say, for example, you're trying to ascertain what occupation is your dharma. By doing this exercise, this one here that I just mentioned, you can understand something, but ultimately you have to try different things. And you have to try different occupations, you have to try different services. You'll find that certain things you're good at, you like doing, you feel fulfilled. Devotees will give you feedback that you're really good at this. And this way, you just have to experiment a little bit. The second thing you have to do is get advice. So you need people in your life who know you very well. Because sometimes what we end up doing in life is instead of doing our dharma, we end up doing someone else's dharma because we think we'll get more appreciation, we'll get more fame, we'll get more material facility, we'll get all of these things if I do that dharma. But you can't do someone else's dharma. You have to do your own dharma. So when you have other people, they help you to tell you that, no, Prabhu, why are you trying to be like a really good singer? You're actually a really good artist. So instead of trying to become something that you're not meant to be, why don't you become the thing that you've actually been gifted a talent in by Krishna? So they help you to understand like where you should be going as well. So advice of others is important. The third thing is introspection and study. So if you see in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you can maybe do a search on it. Shivaram Swami, basically what he did is he did a whole research on the modes of nature and the different varnas and the different ashramas, and he made it into a whole chart. So you can see like a Brahmana has these qualities, a Kshatriya works like this, a Vaishya works like this. And when you study the qualities of different varnas, the qualities of different types of people, then you'll begin to see, oh, I'm this kind of person. And then that knowledge will help you to reveal who you are like that.
Sorry, where we can find this from Shivaram Maharaj?
It's Shivaram Swami. If you do a search on three modes of material nature, Shivaram Swami, I'm sure you'll get something on the net.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so these are some points. Finding dharma is a big thing. Finding dharma is a really, really big thing. And if we're able to find our dharma, therefore, even in a few verses before this verse, Krishna says, it is better to do your own duty, even if there's some difficulty, than another person's duty, even if you think you're doing it perfectly. You must follow your own path. So that's a really, really important point.
Thank you.
It's a big topic, Guru. We could discuss more. Maybe that's a future lecture, Dharma.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I don't know if anyone else has any questions. I'm sure there are things coming through here. Maybe I just ask devotees to unmute and say it rather than me reading it out. Anyone want to unmute and say their question? Yeah.
Hello. My name is Agata. I have the impression that whenever I am increasing quantity of devotionary service, my quality of devotionary service is going down. This is like in devotional service as well as in material life. So
yeah.
I don't know how to overcome this.
Right. So sometimes it feels like when you're increasing quantity, then you're decreasing quality. So how do you manage that? I'm doing a lot of drawing today, but I just like to do it because maybe it helps understand also. I talked a lot about intensity, but now I just want to give you one other mantra when it comes to intensity. Because otherwise the intensity can end up breaking you or damaging you rather than helping you to advance. So the mantra is this: increase your intensity in a way that fits with your personality so that you can maintain consistency that will help you awaken your spirituality. So what happens is when you try to become intense in a way that doesn't fit with your personality, then what will happen is that increase will lead to a decrease in quality. So say, for example, like some people are like multitaskers, like they have that kind of mentality. They can do many, many things at once and it doesn't affect them. But other people, they need to do like one thing. So that person whose like personality is to do one thing, they might think, I need to increase the quantity of what I'm doing and I need to start multitasking. And then they start multitasking and their quality goes down. So they need to understand that I have a certain personality and I have to increase my intensity in a way that fits with my personality. So for some of us, it means increasing quantity. For some of us, it means increasing quality. If you find that your increase of quantity is decreasing your quality, it could be two things. It could be one, that it just takes some time for you to get in the groove. Like when you move from 8 rounds to 12 rounds, then it may just take you like a few months to get used to chanting those 4 extra rounds with quality. So sometimes it's just a matter of giving yourself some time to get used to it. The second thing, it may be that quantity doesn't fit and it's a problem for your quality, and therefore you need to find some other way of doing it. See what I'm saying? So everyone is individual. And everyone has their own individual personality. And we're all advancing on the spiritual path in our own individual ways. So the best thing is when you're increasing your intensity through these 4 things, the best advice I can give you is to have a really good friend in Krishna consciousness who you're constantly talking to. And they can tell you whether you're quantity, your quality, your difficulty, your responsibility is in the right measurement. They can tell you if you're doing too less, and they can tell you if you're doing too much, and they can tell you if you're doing too much of this one, but you should be actually doing more of this one. That's why we need the devotees in our lives. It's like when you're doing weightlifting. If I'm just like going to the gym and I say like, okay, I'm going to lift this pen 100 times, like I ain't going to make any advancement because there's no weight on this pen. At the same time, if I go in the gym and try to lift like the heaviest thing, then I'm going to break my back. So therefore I need a personal trainer who will tell you how much you can do. So the best advice I can give you is that just find a good friend. And they'll coach you. I'm sure that it looks like there's many good coaches in the room with you there. So I'm sure you'll find someone who can help. Thank you for your question. It's 7 o'clock. I don't mind continuing on. You can just tell me when I need to stop.
Hare Krishna, bro. Please.
Hare Krishna.
Humble obeisances. I'm a student. I know that this question might be sound like stupid because there are all the are like exalted Vaishnavas I am associating right now. But the thing is what I am facing difficulty right now that. Let's say yesterday it was like Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi, right? So I promised to Krishna that I will do some more rounds of chanting. I don't want to share how many, but for example, I just increased the number that I want to do or do some more service. But somehow I have a big belly. I have this sense to eat more and more and it's really difficult. It's going to really difficult for me, right? For last few Ekadashis and for some few fasting days, somehow I am having anger, you know, when I am hungry. For example, yesterday when I was chanting in the middle of my chant, I was like so angry that I was talking with my friend and I can feel that something is burning inside me. And I don't know. And then I read Bhagavad Gita chapter 16 and it comes down my mind because I felt like, yeah, what I am right now doing, it's from the demoniac nature. So so my question is how can I deal with this hunger thing and I can control my sense, I can control my tongue. So that the thing is, I don't want to waste those days during Ekadashi because these are the holy days. So I can associate with Krishna more and more and chant with more intensity, bro. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Nice question. I can relate to your challenges. Okay, here we go. Let me just go on the screen again and just share something with you. The Sanskrit word for fasting is, the Sanskrit word for fasting is upavas. You maybe know this. Upa means close. And vas means to reside. So the Sanskrit word of for fasting, upavas, literally means to reside close to Krishna. It's a day in which the main objective is to chant more, to read more, to be more absorbed. The main objective is not to abstain from food or prasadam. That's simply a measure that you take that helps you to then reside more closely to Krishna by being absorbed in spiritual activity. Now, this is a very important point we should understand. The goal of Krishna consciousness is not to become a yogi. The goal is not just to be able to control our mind, control our senses, be really, really strict, really, really austere. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to become a bhakta, to fall in love with Krishna, to give your heart to Krishna. So the main thing that we need to be doing is ensuring that we're enthusiastic in hearing, enthusiastic in chanting, enthusiastic in serving the Vaishnavas. Each one of us may be having different challenges. Some are more self-controlled, some are more mind-controlled, some are more austere, some are more, and they can use those things for Krishna. And if we don't have those things, we try to improve because it facilitates our Krishna consciousness. But don't worry, Prabhu. The main thing is yesterday was a success because you chanted more rounds. And even if you ate, it's okay. Ultimately you engaged more in spiritual activity. And next time you can try to fasting you can also do in different ways. Like one is nirjal, which means nothing. Or you can do sajal, which means only water. Or you can do phala, which means only fruits. Or you can do like Ekadashi fast, like only grains. Or you can do like only eating once a day. Or you can do like, you know, I'll eat everything, but I won't have sweets. So you just choose. You choose something. And then you try to live according to that. And then next time you can try something more. But don't worry. The goal of Krishna consciousness is not just to control our mind and senses. And all these things help. But the ultimate thing is to engage in the spiritual practices, which will purify our hearts and bring us closer to Krishna.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhuji. But my question is, why this is upbringing all this anger in from me?
Yeah, it brings anger because there's an ideal in Krishna consciousness and there's the real of where we are at and we're falling short. And you see, this whole distance is uncomfortable because we're thinking like, I want to be that type of devotee, but I'm not. I want to be humble. But, you know, that devotee gets on my nerves and I feel pretty envious and proud when I see them. I want to be tolerant. I want to be kind. But sometimes I see all this selfishness within myself. So we don't want to, we're falling short. Therefore, it's a bit uncomfortable. It causes anger. But let me, okay, let me share one more thing with you. One time I was in Vrindavan. And I went to a place called Surya Kund, and Sachinandan Swami was doing his like a lot of bhajan there and like Kartik vows. So he was giving a lecture, and then Radhana Swami asked him, what is your realization on this day doing all of this spiritual activity in Vrindavan? And Sachinandan Swami said, in a beautiful one line, he says, I am feeling fallen, but hopeful. And this is the mood of a devotee. That they feel as though I'm fallen, I'm disappointed with myself, I'm sure of the ideals that I seek, I'm not living according to all the principles I want to live by, but I'm hopeful because I know this process is so powerful. The association of devotees is so powerful. Srila Prabhupada's mercy and Gauranga's mercy is so powerful that I have an incredible hope that even though I'm fallen, I will be able to come up to the standard. So the point is, if we only feel fallen, then we can end up sometimes becoming so discouraged that we move away from spiritual life. Therefore, we must feel fallen, but hopeful. So yes, we're falling short, but remember how powerful chanting is, how powerful the process is. And let me give you one final thing. Don't always look in your life about how far I have still to go. Also, look at your life, look back, and give yourself some credit how far I have come. How much have you changed in the last 6 months? How much have you developed in your relationship with Krishna in the last year? You've already come very, very far. Yes, there's still some distance to go, but look how far you've already come. So that means if you just carry on doing what you've been doing, then you will get there. So don't always look for perfection, but just make sure you're progressing. Progress more important than perfection. And I guarantee you, you look at your life, you're a different person to who you were 1 year ago, isn't it? Your habits, your desires, your goals, you've changed and you'll carry on changing. Devotees are dangerous. They change your life.
Thanks a lot.
I did not plan to be living in a monastery wearing orange cloth with a shaved head, having this on my. This was not in the plan. But the devotees are powerful, and Gauranga is irresistible. So it will happen. So feel fallen. Yes, we're fallen, but feel hopeful. This process is amazing.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Prabhu. Thanks a lot.
Very well. It's 7:10 again. You just tell me when we're supposed to end.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure, Prabhu.
So sometimes, or mostly always, our sadhana is very conditioned from our anarthas, which we have as a result of our karma. And it makes difficult to increase the quantity and quality to come closer to Krishna. And sometimes I think, because actually we know Krishna is in charge of us and our karma doesn't condition us so much anymore. Or now my question is, how we can feel our obstacles in our life? Is this Krishna's mercy or it is our karma?
Okay, so how do we know whether the obstacles in our life are Krishna's mercy or our karma?
Yes.
See, the first thing is karma is also Krishna's mercy. Everything is Krishna's mercy. Because even when Krishna gives you karma, why does Krishna give you karma? Because karma is meant to be educational, is meant to teach you a better way of living, is meant to help you to dig a little deeper in your life and transform to overcome that karma, you see? So everything that happens in our life is Krishna's mercy. But one thing is, when you take up spiritual life, the moment you turn to Krishna and say, I want to become a devotee, then actually nothing is happening just by karma. Now Krishna is involved in everything which is happening. And what Krishna will do is he'll take your karma and then he'll give it to you in such a way that it will actually help you to come closer to him. So there's no question. When you become a devotee, all of your karma, no matter how bad you may think it is, all of your karma is actually being specifically given to you by Krishna in a specific way to help you come closer to him. Now the question is, are we going to be able to utilize that karma, learn the lessons, and develop from it in the right way? That's the question. So now the question is, how am I going to make sure that the karmic challenges that I'm facing, I'm going to use them in a beneficial way? How are you going to make sure you're going to do that? That's why you need to always be in contact with Shastra, because Shastra gives you the bigger vision of why you may be experiencing certain things you're experiencing. You need to be in contact with Guru and you need to be in contact with Sadhus. Because Guru, Sadhus and Shastra help you to decode your karma and understand how to use your karma, utilize your karma to advance in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And therefore for a devotee, Every devotee should be thinking, how am I becoming more connected in my relationship with Guru? How am I becoming more connected in my relationship with sadhus or other devotees? How am I becoming more connected with my relationship with Shastra? The more you're connected with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, the more your vision will change. And the more your vision changes, the more you'll be able to see that every single thing happening around you and every single thing happening in your life is actually specifically arranged by Krishna to bring you closer to him. But it depends on vision. And vision is developed, spiritual vision is developed by close connection with Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Finished there? Or another last question? We're finished there.
Yes, I think we have come to
the end. There are more questions, but another day.
on another day. So that leads me to the conclusion that we should really have you again as a speaker here in the very near future. And thank you very much for having us, for giving this nice interactive and visually and intellectually stimulating presentation and lecture. So as I said, I think we would all love to have you again very soon. Wednesday. So you can consider this applause and cheering as a vote by acclamation. So that means a yes, everyone.
I want some Maha Prasadam from the deities. I'll have to come over. Thank you so much. All glories to Prabhupada.
Thank you. Shapa Prabhu ki jai.